This is Drive Through Radio on AM 790. Call Paul and John Zangari now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. Drive Through Radio with Paul and John Zangari on your station for talking business, AM 790.
Oh, good morning and welcome to Drive Through Radio. This is John Zangari driving the bus today instead of just sitting in the passenger seat. And in the passenger seat, we have George Kennedy.
Good morning, John. How you doing?
Good, yo.
Good.
And reading the GPS, we have Brett Ferruccio in, behind the glass because I guess he wants to stay safe from us.
Yes, that's why I'm back here, behind the protective glass.
I'm a little jealous.
Well, you better watch out then, George. All right, today we're going to talk about all kinds of things and that having to do with cars. We can talk about new cars, old cars, car repair. Hey, even if you're having a problem with your snowblower, because you probably should be thinking about that after looking at what we've been feeling.
It was 22, 24 this morning when I came down from Boston.
Yeah, and guess what? Yesterday I came up from Florida, where all week it was in the mid-80s.
And I'm supposed to feel bad for you? Is that how this works?
Well, because when I left, it was in the 70s here.
That's true.
You know?
It's true.
They pulled this, in the middle of the night. They just moved the cold air in on me.
It's a good time to start thinking about winter tires and getting your car ready and starting to throw the ice scraper in the back seat.
That's a good idea, too. And you know what? Before you really get the winter weather, you will need that ice scraper.
Absolutely, yeah.
So one of the things I did plan on talking about were snow tires.
How about that?
And we're going to also hopefully be able to talk about a Honda Fit for a test drive that George has been beating up the streets with. And there's a new Jeep Wrangler and a new Hummer, too. And it's really not a Hummer, but that's what's going to replace the Hummer. First, let's get back to the warm weather climates, Florida. and this is something we like to talk about in on this show, or maybe we don't, but we seem to have to talk about it a lot. And that is Rhode Island drivers who don't signal.
Oh, wow. That's how much time you got.
Well, you know what? We'll leave the Rhode Island drivers alone because enough of them apparently have moved to Florida. You wouldn't believe how many times somebody on the highway or on a street, and there's streets in most of the places I went, except for down Route 1 and that, most of the streets are like 3 and 4 lanes wide.
Right.
And they still cut in front of you without signaling.
It's not so much cut, because remember,
there was no room.
This is the Blue Plate Special club, too. So, like, they're not so much cutting you off as they're just drifting aimlessly lane to lane.
Oh, that wasn't aimless lane. These were cut-ins.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. I know the difference.
Right.
And I was just shocked that I said, you know, I thought it was only in Rhode Island because, you know, I did notice this. Well, not just Rhode Island, southeastern Mass, you know, right around the Rhode Island border where they don't like to use their signals. And one of the things that I do
notice. You mean the Montana of New England?
Yeah. And I've noticed that, like, when you drive to Boston and you're in 93 or 95, 120/128, and you're going, you know, somebody will cut in front of you, but they'll put that signal on one half a second before they turn the wheel and say, I'm moving in, get ready, bye.
As a Bostonian, I can defend that, right? And so, I talk to people from around the country when I'm on these, press trips and, you know, testing new cars, and they're always like, oh, Boston drivers. Here's the thing. We're not jerks. We're deliberate, okay?
We're
driving like maniacs, but I'm going to signal and let you know the direction in which I'm going fast. Because it's a safety thing. Look, if I want to get that lane open, I'm going to signal and that person's going to back off a little bit. You are clearing the way and you're letting others know. If you're going to drive like a maniac, you might as well clear the path for yourself, and signaling does that.
Well, when I go up to Boston and I'm driving up 95 and I'm leaving a space because I always like to leave that space so that I have plenty of room to stop.
In the car ahead of you?
Yeah. Because when you're on 95, you know, you could be doing 70, and 20 seconds later, you're doing 20.
Right.
And so I like to leave that space. Now, that space, ends up being no space at all, because as I get closer and closer, cars keep pulling in. My space gets smaller and smaller. Cars keep pulling
in. That's why I don't
and
do
then,
that.
And then I leave no space.
So, all right. So it's funny you say that. The new adaptive cruise controls that are in a lot of cars, mm-hmm. they provide a thing where you can basically set the distance. And I've found that when they started rolling this feature out, the closest distance available left too much space and people would sneak
in. Absolutely.
And so they needed like a Massachusetts driver distance, which is like 5 feet.
yes.
But what I've found, though, in new systems, though, is that it's closer. So either the braking, the distance sensors are better and the braking's better.
Yeah.
You just got to be ready to jump on the brakes at all times, essentially.
Well, actually, you should. But I got to tell you, I find that a little bit annoying, this distance maintaining cruise control. Because as I was driving in Florida, I was in the left lane in a lot of cases because I was slowly going by somebody in the right lane.
Okay.
And I noticed somebody come flying up in the rearview mirror from way back. And then all of a sudden, they didn't seem to be catching up to me because I was going to pull over
right.
to get out of their way if they kept going along at that fast pace. But they seemed to slow down and they never seemed to get close. I'm going, what the heck is going on?
So you think the person was like, had it set at 100 on the cruise but had the distance?
Well, probably more like 85.
Sure, okay.
You know, and yeah, I think.
Which makes me wonder how fast you were going in the fast lane.
I was.
Are you one of those slow in the fast lane people? You do drive a Prius, so.
No. Actually, it will do over 85.
That's a revelation.
And it's going a lot higher than that, too. I wasn't driving a Prius. I was driving a rental down there. But what happened is if it was a 70, I was always trying to maintain a 9 mile, 5 to 9 mile
above. And that's smart.
Above,
that's smart. Yeah.
Especially when you're in foreign
especially
area.
Especially in Florida too, because there are some roads where they'll definitely nail you.
Yeah, and so that's what I found kind of annoying about that speed control with the distance control involved in it. And so, you know, that got to be annoying. Then I said, oh, the heck with them. Wait till they're on my bumper. You know, if I haven't passed this guy and they're not on my bumper, you know, because in Massachusetts, they'll go flying up and it'll get right on your bumper. You move over, you get back over.
Right.
You move in and out.
Right.
And here's a story. I don't know if you've ever heard this. You know, they talk about Massachusetts drivers. And Massachusetts drivers, well, not Massachusetts, I'm going to say Boston, because I think there's a difference. Somebody who lives in Pittsfield, Mass, doesn't drive this way.
That's almost a different state to us, I should point out.
It's Eastern New York.
Yeah,
yes.
right. I mean, we call Worcester Western Mass.
Oh.
If you're west of 495, you're in the boonies.
Oh, I should call it Eastern Adirondacks. All right. But anyway, I was going up 93, and this was just a little bit before you got to where the bridges cross the top of the highway,
have the
names on them, where it's Boulevard Street, Antwerp Street. I think that's Milton, but I'm not sure.
I think you might be right, yeah.
Or Quincy, one or the other. And I'm going through there, there's a cop parked on the side of the road with his flashing lights on, and he's sticking out like 2 feet into the travel lane, and in front of him there's a car. Now, I don't know why the car was stopped.
He's at like a protective angle, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so that meant if you were in the low speed lane, you would have to move to the left.
Well, that's a Mass state law that if there's a cop with his blues on.
This is before that law.
Predates it.
Yeah. And he was like kind of blocking that travel lane. And all three lanes snaked around the cop.
Oh.
Okay, I could not believe that actually happened.
We're resourceful drivers, okay?
And I said, you know what? In Rhode Island, they would have stopped, they wouldn't have tried to move over, and nobody in that middle lane would have let you go around the cop.
And wait, explain that again?
If that happened in Rhode Island,
uh-huh.
where the cop was sticking in the travel lane, the first car would have stopped.
Yeah.
Because they're intimidated drivers in some cases are just inept. All right. Okay. They would have stopped because they couldn't go around them because there was somebody next to them.
Oh, so the middle lane would have just kept going and not let them zipper in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's what would have happened. I wish I had that on film. I could see that. I just wish I had that in film. That was a day I said, oh, you know, you guys out here are really something. You're going to let everybody's going to keep doing what they have to do to keep traffic moving.
Massachusetts tends to do that too, where they refuse to let people zipper though. And I think what the funny thing is, like in the UK, they have PSAs to tell people to zipper. And if you don't know, zipper is every other car merges. And that's a very...
Yeah, but you know what? I find that has been working pretty much in the Boston area.
It's been getting better. I do feel sometimes when I'm like, you know, trying to get into a lane, somebody's pushing up on you to try and prevent, you know.
But when you get it to the end of 95, where it goes to 93 and
right,
128
right.
Slash 95, I find that a zipper there at the end, though there's no reason they should put a dual lane exit there. But
if there's any place that needs a dual lane, it's that right there.
And I remember when people self dual laned it back, like in the 80s.
Jeez. Oh, well, if you look at the end of, is that 395 or 295? That goes
295.
295, excuse me. That goes down to one lane when you're getting back on 95 north. And it's got, like, very big runouts on either side. There's, like, a white side and a yellow side. And it's got big, you know, big hazard lines on either side to force you into one lane. I don't know if it's still like that.
Well, I'm not sure either. I'm not familiar with that one. But, I think it's about time that we take a break.
Yeah, we've talked about every, you know, traffic infraction possible.
Possible. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. We'll be right back.
Won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? Oh Lord.
Oh well, I hope God didn't grant her request, because I'm sure she would have gotten many DUIs. We're back on the other side now. Janice is faded into the past, and today is a day that is honoring many people, or thousands, or maybe millions, I guess you could say, over the life of the country. And today is Veterans Day, so we have to thank all the veterans today, and we should every day, but this is a day that stands out for that. There's many services at veteran cemeteries and other, I'll call it, public places. And my father was a veteran. He was a veteran of World War II from day one, or second one, because he was at Pearl Harbor, and he survived that and continued on in the Navy for the rest of his hitch, whatever. I don't know how much of it he had left, if he had 3 years or whatever the assignment was, but he continued on that. But that was the only battle he was in. If he was in any other battle, he never talked about any others, but just that one. So hats off to all our veterans alive and past.
Yep, Tanya listening, thank you for your service.
Yep. Today, let's see, the weather, as I started to mention earlier about the big change, whether you realize it or not, and this is just a little bit sooner than we would talk about it, but the weather got extra cold sooner than we expected.
Yeah, if you haven't been outside yet, you're in for a surprise.
It is. And, you know, the snow tires of, you know, market, of course, probably they haven't started advertising when they...
I don't know. You have the radio on? They're already...
I didn't hear any, but that's okay. Probably because I haven't listened to the radio much until this morning, and because I was down in Florida. And,
sure.
Actually, I listened to the radio the whole time I was in the car.
Look, they've already got snow tire ads.
They've
already got Christmas ads on, man. Like, once Christmas ads are on, the snow tire ads usually come on.
Well, we went to the Edison Ford retreat slash museum down in Fort Myers, Florida. And they were, on the day we went, which would have been Thursday, they were actually putting up the Christmas decorations, and we were, you know, in their way. Of course,
right.
They don't mind because you're there spending your money, but they were putting up the Christmas decorations. So just a little bit about snow tires. Snow tires, I'm going to say, have come a long way since the original snow tires, and there's some kind of snow tires called mud and snow tires. For example, if you had a set of snow tires and they were just plain old snow tires and you drove to Florida, you would have a problem with tire longevity.
Right, right.
Because snow tires are made to run in cold weather climates. Mud and snow tires are made to run in cold and warm weather.
If you have just a snow tire, basically, and you go out there where it's warm or whatever, that tread's going to come off like a cheese grater. The highway's going to be it.
Yeah.
So it's a different compound that allows that to be a little less tacky, I guess, in the colder climates, but it can churn through mud a little bit better.
And back in, I'll say, the old days, or back in the day, where every car except Saab was rear-wheel drive, everybody knew where to put the snow tires. They put them in the rear. And because technically in that kind of weather, the bad weather, they would get the best traction. And just coincidentally, your best traction tire should be in the rear.
Even on a front-wheel drive car?
Yes.
So wait. But yeah, but people get four sets of snow tires now.
That's why. And that's what I'm saying.
Right.
That if you have a front-wheel drive car and you want snow tires for traction, if you put just snow tires in the front, you may have a quirky handling situation going on, or a spin out kind of thing going on. You'll get good traction to go, but you won't get the handling.
In turns and in braking,
And that kind of stuff. So the suggestion by the tire companies, but the car companies also say four snow tires.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people do that generally now. Who get snow tires, get them all four. I don't think that people really just get two anymore.
You know, I don't know, but I do know that when we bought snow tires for my daughter's car, and she lived in the Worcester area.
Mm-hmm. Western Mass, you mean?
Yeah, okay, okay. And that, of course, is the snow belt of
sure.
Massachusetts. We got her four snow tires.
Yeah, and so that's generally a good rule of thumb to get four. The other thing that it seems obvious, but not everybody does, is that don't keep the wheels on and have them swap the tires. Have a dedicated set of Steelies.
That runs into a little bit of money, but...
It does, yeah, but so does the time that it takes for the mechanic to crank those tires off every year and on every year. You can do damage to the rim. It's extra time, whereas if you just have the tires fitted to a set of steel wheels, your nice aluminum wheels aren't getting chewed up by salt and sand on the road in the winter. And basically those are your beater wheels to go with your winter tires.
Well, believe it or not, if your car is old enough, you'll probably be able to find some alloy wheels in the junkyard that you can purchase for a fairly decent price instead of buying new steel wheels. Because don't forget, steel wheels will rust. So if you can get a set of aluminum wheels, look into it.
Right. I mean, so just in general, have a second set of wheels to go with those winter tires.
And it isn't, I'm going to say, it's not so much the time, but there is also money involved to
dismount, that time is
remount,
money. Right?
And well, you're there plus the money. You know, you're waiting, and you're going to spend the money, and then after you mounted them, then you have to balance them.
Right.
So there's a cost involved, and that's times four. So if you think these snow tires will last you several seasons, then it would be worth buying the wheels.
Sure.
You know, so that's a thing to consider. Now, which snow tires should I buy? Well, which are the best? Well, some people are going to say the most expensive ones. Well, guess what? No. There's ratings online by tire sellers. For example, if you went to a tire company that sells many different brands.
Like, are you going to trust the tire seller, though?
Hang on. Yeah, in a way, yes. There's let's say you got places like Sullivan Tire, Town Fair Tire, and Tire Pros, those kind of guys. On some of these tire seller websites, they have ratings for all the tires they carry. And if they carry brands like Michelin, Goodyear, Firestone, whatever, Yokohama, and on and on and on, they'll rate them all the same way. And some of them have customer ratings. Now, to me, the customer ratings sometimes are good and sometimes are not.
Because everyone's an expert, right?
Well, yeah, and some people, you know, they get a set of snow tires, and they had ball tires on before, and they drove in the snow with ball tires, and now, oh, these tires are fantastic.
Or on the other hand, they get the snow tires on and drive in 3 feet of snow like it's August, and they're doing 90 on the highway, and they're, oh, I spun out. Well, like, that's on you.
Yeah. And also, somebody that George will trust, Consumer Reports.
I was about to mention them, yeah. They have one of the most definitive tire rating collections. I mean, that's a trusted source.
And believe it or not, the most expensive tires are not
always the best.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
So check that stuff out. And George doesn't get Consumer Reports. He's not a member, I guess. But how do you do that? How do you check out Consumer Reports if you're not a member?
I mean, you would go to consumerreports.org and you'd probably sign up for... I mean, they have limited stories, you know, that are free. I actually just got a set of tires for my Jeep. I had mud terrain tires,
mm-hmm.
so like basically off-road mud terrains, like very meaty tires.
Yep.
And I swapped them for BF Goodrich all-terrain tires, the KO2s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're similar to the all-terrain tires that have been around for years, but they've taken those cleats and put sipes in the middle of them.
Mm-hmm.
So they get rid of moisture a little bit faster. So they basically... I loved having the Jeep that like looked like it was ready to go into, you know, go off into the mountains, but it wasn't so practical for driving. It, you know, it was driving like a tank. The all-terrains are a little bit more well-rounded. It drives more like a car now, but it's still just as capable in the snow and the mud.
So, well, that's an improvement, I guess, for that you enjoy.
Well, as our good friend Craig Fitzgerald pointed out one time,
yeah.
in talking about the Winter Vehicle Award for NEMPA, the things that make a winter vehicle good should not detract from its usability the rest of the year.
And that's true. What,
you know, that's why Subaru is a great all-around winter car, because it gets the job done, but it you know, it does it without fuss. This way I've moved from maybe a little less off-road capability to a more well-rounded vehicle that I can drive and like throw the keys to like my mom or something like that, and she can
right.
drive and not feel like she's driving like an off-road rig.
Right. Yeah. That of course does make a big difference. Well, you know, you mentioned your Wrangler.
Cherokee.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no, I'm thinking Wrangler because
yeah.
as you know that at one time the military all had Jeeps.
Yeah, Willys MB.
Yeah, and back to World War II, they had
yeah.
Ford manufactured Jeeps as well.
The Mutts.
And
those came later, the MUTT.
Well... I guess I'm not sure which one came when.
Oh,
but,
yeah. I know my Jeep history. All right.
You know, that's good. That's why we keep you around. All right. Now they replaced that after a zillion years in about 1985 with the Humvee, which was incredibly huge. It was at least twice the size of
right.
Of
and
a
it
Jeep.
Moved the, it moved the engine to the middle of the vehicle and put a giant diesel engine in there. So it was a big leap forward.
Yeah, except. People complain and say, well, you can't go between two trees with it. Well, you could probably knock the trees down, but anyway. That was the big improvement. Now, that is on its way out, too.
Well,
and,
that was phased out years ago, right.
And there's a new Jeep coming as well. And when we come back on the other side of the break, we'll talk about the new Jeep. And oh, just a little bit about the new Humvee replacement.
Oh, 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 let's fly way up to the clouds. J. trailer for sale or rent, rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes, but 2 hours of pushing.
Well, we're back. I guess we're not staying at the Hayseed Motel that he was working at there. What was it, 2 bits for a room?
You got me. This predates me by decades.
Really? How about that?
Are you shocked to hear that?
Not really. So anyway, things that are leaving, things that are gone, the old days when things where everything was cheap, and today not everything is cheap anymore. And speaking of things leaving, as I mentioned earlier, the Humvee is on its way out.
Well, it's been phased out.
Well, no, it is still there. It's not like find a Jeep on a military.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
Can find plenty of Humvees out there. But anyway, 30 years ago it started replacing the Jeep, mm-hmm. and now it's going to get replaced by the Oshkosh JLTV. And now that I'm not sure what I know what they're thinking is that one of the problems is with the Humvee. It's hard to armor it and make it through the renovations of armoring and do everything it
well.
They wanted
so this is
it
this
to
is
do.
A, this is this goes back to the Iraq War. They're susceptible to improvised explosive devices,
right? Mm-hmm.
And so the Humvee was designed to just be wide and flat, and that just basically sucks up the brunt of an explosion. The MRAP, which is sort of the general term for a lot of these new, you know,
armaments.
It's like military rapid assault program or something of that nature. They basically have a V-shaped hull, a lot of these vehicles now,
yep.
which basically blows the explosion out either side.
Right.
And it's they're already armored up, so you don't have to take an existing vehicle and add armor plating. Those places are already heavily armored. They're using more efficient diesel engines. Some of them run quieter, which is good for being a little more stealthy.
Right.
A lot of the windows are, you know, instead of having wide-open windows, they're a lot narrower because, you know, you don't need to have a full line of sight, but, you know, it's good to have that little opening, but a lot more protection.
Well, the one thing that I noticed about this, though, is when you park a Humvee next to practically everything else, it dwarfs it.
Mm-hmm.
Park the Humvee next to the Oshkosh.
Right.
And now it looks small.
Right, right, absolutely.
And that's the part about I'm not sure what they're thinking. These aren't cars anymore. They're bigger than F-350s,
right?
With the extended cab and the long bed, by the looks of it.
Well, you know what they're thinking is they're looking at all of the vulnerabilities of the Hummer, and basically saying that if we're going to build a vehicle, then it's better protect the people inside it.
I think what they're looking at now is a light tank with rubber wheels, tires.
Sure, I mean, but yeah. If they're going to build that and they can guarantee that it's far more protective, then absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the size and I'm going like, wow, this thing is big.
Then I mean, the thing is, you got to stop thinking about it as a car, okay? And like you said, you mentioned as a tank with four wheels, there's not going to be a second market of Oshkosh vehicles for Arnold Schwarzenegger to drive.
No,
this is we've
this is it.
Escaped that realm of like, oh, this is also a vehicle. This is a dedicated military-only vehicle.
Yeah, and one of the things that I will point out, it has a reworked, which doesn't sound that good, but it really is. It's a Duramax diesel,
right?
6.6 Duramax diesel engine,
right.
Which has a lot more horsepower and a lot more torque.
Well, a lot more torque, too.
Yeah, than the one that you can buy in your Chevrolet.
Well, look, the thing might be twice the size, but I guarantee you it weighs three times as much.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it needs that torque. So you know, a Duramax diesel, Allison transmission, I believe. I mean,
yes.
You know, that's the setup that they're easy to work on. Because remember, one of the problems with the Humvees and other military vehicles is that for every, 3 hours that you use it, it sits in the shop for, 10. Getting maintained, getting all the dirt taken out of it, getting, you know, all that upkeep takes time.
One of the reasons the Oshkosh One, it was the downtime was way over the what they were looking for downtime.
Right, right.
So
and that modular, you know, the ability to get in there and work on it, the ability for it to stay running. I mean, that's huge. That affects supply lines. That affects, you know, a lot of logistical concerns.
When I said way over the amount of time in between service,
sure,
and in between repairs and that kind of
right.
thing.
Right. So, you know, they want to buy a vehicle that I'm sure is expensive, but it can stay running.
That you need it that way.
Right.
And since you're not going to probably be able to buy one of these, what could you buy to replace it in your garage that you could drive on the street or not on the street? I would think a Jeep Wrangler.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, the Wrangler comes from a long line of, you know, going back to World War II, the Willys MB.
Yeah.
And then after the war, they started selling them the Willys Jeep as a, you know, a consumer vehicle. And, you know, eventually that became the CJ and then, you know, then went on as the Wrangler. And they're finally replacing the Wrangler this either fall into the winter, and I'll be driving the new 2018 Wrangler in December.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first redesign in 10 years. And that's significant because, you know, you look at the life cycle of a vehicle, they usually update and replace a car, what, every 6 years with a mid-cycle refresh every three?
Mm-hmm.
So going 10 years is a long time in the automotive landscape, and a lot has changed in the SUV market in those 10 years. Crossover is king right now. But the Wrangler is still an incredibly popular vehicle. Even though they haven't updated it very much in the last 5 years, they're still breaking sales records. They're still selling a gajillion of these things. So in redesigning that, they had to do the things that they didn't want to break what they've got.
True. That's being smart.
Because... Right. Well, it's in looking at some information has already come out about this vehicle. Some images have leaked, like the entire owner's manual is leaked online. So which is really cool. I mean, what's awesome about Jeep is that there are few communities that are as enthusiastic as Jeep owners are. I mean, you've got BMW people, you got Porsche people. They can't touch.
Hold on to your hat, Prius owners. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but you know what? You know, you guys basically your enthusiasm comes down to a spreadsheet. Ours is something you can go out there and off road and upfit your vehicle and whatnot.
Well, they drive on the road.
Yeah, they do both. So the fact is though that it's so enthusiastic that people were able to find this owner's manual and leak it online, and there's been a fervor over the details. A couple things we learned. One, the main engine's still 3.6 liter Pentastar V6,
okay.
Probably making mm-hmm. around 280 to 300 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
The base engine's going to be a turbocharged 2 liter inline four.
Okay.
And here's the kicker, though. Here's sort of the wrinkle. I don't know if they recommend. I don't know if it requires 91 fuel.
Ooh.
Which is a bit. I mean, for Wrangler owners, that could be, you know, a bit of a wrinkle.
Mm.
The other thing is there may be a diesel engine.
Mm-hmm.
And there is going to definitely be a pickup truck.
Yeah, and I've seen crappy photos of the pickup truck, which I'm not really sure that is a big deal as far as the photos, the spy photos go, because
right.
it's going to look like a Wrangler with a box on the back.
So that's the thing. So I, you know, there have been aftermarket kits to turn a Wrangler into a pickup truck in the past,
yep.
but this is the first one out of the dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is this is going to be a four-door.
Yeah, that did you? I counted two doors on one side yep. in the picture.
Right, yeah. that's good. But there have been some leaked CAD photos too, or CAD images, yep. The schematics.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a long vehicle. I mean, this is going to be as long as like a double cab pickup truck.
Oh, really? So that'd be longer than a Grand Cherokee.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so because. In order for that vehicle to be viable, it had to be the Wrangler Unlimited. Once they started building the four-door Wrangler, they started doing gangbusters. The majority of Wranglers sold are those Unlimiteds.
Uh-huh.
So it had to be four doors. It's got the bed in the back. One of the other cool things, too, is for Wranglers right now, you have your option of a soft top or a hard top.
Mm-hmm.
There's a third option for this new Wrangler.
Okay, retractable hard?
That's exactly. Well, no, it's the, like the sky slider roof, sort of like in the previous generation Jeep Liberty.
Okay,
where
yeah.
the sides of the top are going to be fixed,
mm-hmm.
but the top is going to be like an accordion top. So it's a soft panel that slides mm-hmm. back, which, to be honest, not every person that drives a Jeep is like off-roading it the way that I would be. They're using it more casually. That mm-hmm. that easy slide back top is going to be great for people that are traveling by themselves that can't like, you know, fold back the top or remove the hard top on their own.
Yeah, and what do you do with it if the weather changes?
Exactly.
What do you do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
that'll be handy.
Right. Another big difference is going to be the interior. That I think is the biggest quantum leap. Is it's going to be a big update. All the new technology, because you think about it, in the 10 years since the Wrangler's been redesigned, mm-hmm. the in-car technology, touchscreens have come the farthest of any other segment. So it's going to be impressive to see like the latest Uconnect technology fit into these cars. You're going to have big touchscreens. You're going to have technology like blind spot monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely going to be standard backup camera because it has to be standard for all vehicles. But you're also going to have things like lanes, park sense, the parking sensors. So all these little things that have developed in the last 10 years in the automotive landscape are going to start to be baked into the new Wrangler. And so it should retain everything that makes it great about durability and rugged driving. And I'm going to learn about it in a few weeks. But it's also baking in all this new technology. And I think that makes it a big reveal this year.
And I hope it maintains the look of the Wrangler.
It will. It's a slight evolution of the look. I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures yet. It's basically looks almost the same. You'd have to have a keen eye.
Oh, that's good. It sounds good. And just before we go to the break, I got to tell you, when I was in Colorado last month and the month before, as I'm coming down the mountain, going up with five vehicles masked, where they were totally
Ooh.
Covered with that zebra-looking
yep.
paper, and you could no idea what they were, but they were SUVs.
Oh, I love me some spy photos of your cars.
So, on the other side, we're going to talk about something new that you can drive, maybe on the off-road, but definitely on the road, a Honda Fit.
I was motivating over the hill. I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road. Nothing out of run my V8 4. Cadillac doing about 95. We bumper to bumper rolling side to side. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline.
Okay, we're back, and what we're going to do now is we're going to go for a ride in a Honda Fit. It's a 2018 Fit 5-door Sport. And George is driving that now. He's been driving it this week, and he's going to tell us what he thinks of it.
It's a car.
It is. Okay, we're all set. Now we'll go on to the next
section. No. This is there's sort of not many cars like this anymore that are basically just like, you know, standard bargain subcompact cars. You've got, the Toyota Yaris, which I don't know if they're even still selling.
They are.
So there you go. There's that. The Nissan Versa.
They got more than one model Yaris now, I believe.
Yeah, they have the
Scion version.
Right, yeah, they're repackaging all the old Scions they couldn't sell.
Well, actually, they're making a new one.
Oh, great. But then there's the Versa, too. So this represents that sort of like, you know, I just need basic transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Of that segment, I would say this is probably one of the best, most notable vehicle.
Okay.
Honda did something when they made the Fit at first, and that's like, you don't have to sacrifice too much for a compact car. Like, this is, it's got a lot of headroom. It's got okay leg room. Mm-hmm. But it's...
How tall are you?
I'm 6'3".
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, leg room is a concern for me. Mm-hmm. So is headroom. It sort of just gets the job done. The one thing I will say, so it's basically got a tiny little 1.5-liter engine. It's got a continuously variable transmission.
Okay.
Honda's been getting really good about making these CVTs. They used to be pretty bad, but they've come around.
I've found that CVTs in general have gotten much better. But there were some car companies that when you drove it, all it felt like was the clutch was slipping.
The rubber band effect, right.
And there was one or two that did a good job.
Nissan was one of the early ones to
do a really
good job, and I think a lot of the other players have caught up. The one thing I will say, though, is that the final ratio isn't tall enough.
No.
Because I was driving down here from Boston. I was doing like 75. The thing was cranking along at like 2,700 RPM.
Well, that's not as bad as you think, because in the old days when you had a V8 and you were doing 70, it would have been doing 3,500.
Yeah, but you know
RPM.
What, though? With modern 8-speed transmissions, somebody could be doing 80 on the highway and they'd be maybe pushing 1,500. You'd be, you know, humming
that
along.
Would be a good size engine, though.
There was a BMW I drove, though.
Right.
It was a V8 a few weeks ago. That
Not
was,
a little 4.
No, but with the 8-speed transmissions, you can get pretty tall. And there's 8, 9, and 10-speed transmissions.
I climbed Pike's Peak in a big, fat Lincoln Navigator with a 3.8. 8, I think, V6, not Power Stroke, the...
the EcoBoost. That's
EcoBoost.
It's a 3.5 liter EcoBoost V6,
and it was doing 1,800 RPM.
Right, right. Those engines are fantastic, yeah. You know? No, but this is just a basic commuter car.
Right.
And they've packaged it well. I think I like that. It's a little tall and narrow, which gives it a little bit of a wobbly feel, but it's even through corners, doing the curves in the highway down in Pawtucket on 95. It was even going through that. It's got a sport shift version, which basically just takes out the overdrive. That's all it does.
Well, does it have paddles because of that?
It has paddles as well, which simulate gears.
No, they don't. They're stepped.
Yeah, sure, whatever it is.
Well, that's the thing. They're stepped in them, right. Which is something we always thought was a little weird. In a car that's transmission has no ratios set as you climb up, but when you play with the shifter... It does.
Well, so you know what the advantage of that, the paddle shifter, it seems strange to have paddle shifters in a CVT with no gears. If you want to pass somebody on the highway, this drops down the RPMs, drops down the ratio enough to let you pick up and get around somebody.
Yep.
But not all cars, like some Subarus, are a little sluggish to drop it down. The manual shift mode allows you to drop that down on your own to get around somebody, to get the revs up, to get to your power band.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's in the advantage for this whole thing is designed for fuel economy. So it's 29 mpg city, it's 36 on the highway, 31 combined. That's pretty good. I mean,
you're talking to a Prius.
It's not to the heightened status of your glorious Prius, but it, you know, for us normies, it does a pretty good job.
Okay. we have the problem of the cold weather hits.
Sure.
Our gas mileage drops from the mid 60s to the high 40s.
See, but I thought putting batteries in the freezer preserves them.
but you got to throw them out first.
Sure. This car comes pretty well equipped. It has leather seats. It has a touchscreen. I will say this, that Honda for a few years was making some of the worst touchscreens on the planet. They were using the double DIN or the double touchscreen. Really bad. They've kind of gotten better, but they also had a problem too where they took out the volume knob in their cars.
Oh, I hate that.
And it's a little touch capacitive slider. They heard the clamoring from owners, and they put a volume knob back
annoying.
In, which is funny because if you look at the HVAC controls, they're all big dials. So what are you doing with the touchscreen?
Right.
But they finally put a volume knob in, but it's this little tiny knob. It's almost like they're like, it's their reluctantly like their middle finger to all the complainers.
Here's your knob.
But it's you know what it
still works though.
Honda makes great engines. They're engineers. I don't think that they have a UI or a UX person over there to say, okay, how does a normal person interact with this car?
Right. I think a lot of people, car builders, don't ask that
question. It's like in the movie Office Space when he goes, I'm a people person. What's wrong with you people? It's like, you know, just think about how the average Joe is going to use this car and work out from there. And the crazy thing is, it seems like they've done that with some features. On the left-hand side by the door, there's a cup holder, so you can, like, take your coffee right out of the drive-thru, get your Dunkies, throw it in. It's just a lot of day-to-day great features, except for that dumb little touchscreen.
Is that cup holder in front of an AC vent?
It is.
All right.
Which drives me nuts because I got iced coffee and I had the heat on it.
No. I love it when it's in the summer and you have your Diet Coke can in front of that.
All right. Okay.
And it keeps it nice and cold.
Yeah, but I have iced coffee year round. Okay.
Oh, well, then quit being a weenie and keep the AC on.
Yeah, or maybe I'm the opposite of weenie because I drink iced coffee in January like a man.
Well, there's a lot of people that do that, that drink iced coffee all year round.
It's 26 degrees out. I'm drinking iced coffee right now.
Yeah, and the ice is doing a good job staying there, too.
Just one note on the price. Starts at $17,500. That's for the Sport. With everything, it's like $18,375. That's a pretty good price.
Does that include all-wheel drive?
No.
So if you want the all-wheel drive, it's going to cost
a little.
They made a
Toyota Matrix all-wheel drive. They never made a Fit all-wheel drive.
Well, I thought they did, but that's you know,
you know what?
Maybe
if you,
they should.
If you want, throw some winter tires on it.
How many?
4 winter tires.
All
please.
Right. So we're heading down the highway with on Route 66, as it sounds like. And we'll be back here next week. Paul was Paul's taking a day off, obviously, and so is Adam. And we'll all be back. The Zangari clan will all be back with Brett next week. And if you want to hear this show again, you can listen to the podcast at 790business.com. Go to the podcast on that website, and you can listen as many times as you can stand it. And you'll be glad you did. And any other older ones that you want to hear, well, you can find them there as well. So, bye-bye.